part of it also was just fear of saying the wrong thing. And I think so many women have experienced that. You're in a group, the topic comes up of equality or gender, and suddenly men who have been perfectly talkative suddenly clam up. And they look at their shoes, they go wander off and look for a drink, right? They feel like they're afraid they're going to say the wrong thing and that we women are going to bite their heads off. And so what I want to do with That's What She Said is to eliminate that fear, to say, here's what the issues are, let's put them out on the table, let's make them discussable.
You are listening to the She Innovates podcast. It's a show that tackles the challenges and achievements of women in areas like innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Michelle King, and today we've got another fantastic guest on the show. Joanne Lipman, the former editor-in-chief of USA Today, is joining us. She's going to be discussing her new book. It's called That's What She Said, What Men Need to Know and Women Need to Tell Them About Working Together. After reading her book, the thing that I really love about it is that it's looking at gender equality from a male perspective. It's an incredibly insightful book with a ton of useful resources for both men and women. So on this episode, we're going to unpack all of that. We're also going to be looking at Joanne's research and how men can become better advocates for women in the workplace. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast. It's so great to have you here today.
Oh, my pleasure.
So look, I'm so excited to talk to you about this book because I think taking a male perspective is just such a unique approach. So I wondered if you could maybe share with our listeners, you know, why you wrote the book and why you're interested in gender equality from a male perspective.
So That's What She Said. The genesis of it was actually more than 3 years ago. The reason that I wrote it grew out of an article that I wrote for the Wall Street Journal. And the article was called Women at Work, A Guide for Men. The reason I wrote that article and the reason I was looking at a male audience in particular is because women talk amongst ourselves all of the time about the issues that we face at work, things like being marginalized, interrupted, overlooked, not given the same respect as the man sitting next to us. And we talk about it amongst ourselves, but what we have not done is talk to men. And, you know, for me, it seemed like there were two unfortunate side effects from that. And one is that the men really didn't know what all of the issues are that we're facing. And so perfectly good guys who might want to be our allies just weren't even aware of what we were experiencing. And then the second unfortunate side effect is we unintentionally demonize those good guys. And so what I wanted to do was sort of lift that veil and explain to men, like, here's these basic issues that your female colleagues are facing every day. And here, by the way, are some solutions. So I spent the last 3 years really crisscrossing the country and the world, seeking out primarily executive men, men in leadership roles who actually are trying to close the gender gap. And I really wanted to interview them about what are some best practices that we could possibly take away. What are lessons you've learned? What are mistakes you've made? And then I backed that up with a tremendous amount of research, all of the latest academic research that's been done on the topic of the gender gap and how do we close it.
So, I mean, I love this, right, that you're looking at it from a male perspective. I wonder how men have received this. So what's been the feedback from men, you know, once the book came out?
What's so interesting is how perspectives have shifted among men, and I think in a very positive direction. So men are generally afraid of this topic. Catalyst, which I'm sure you're aware, is the nonprofit that follows working women. It does research on women generally, but a few years ago it went out and asked senior executive men a question. They asked, what might be a barrier for you to champion equality at work? And 51% of those men said lack of awareness of exactly what the issues are. 74% of the men said fear. The fear they cited was, in part, it was fear of loss of status among other men. But part of it also was just fear of saying the wrong thing. And I think so many women have experienced that. You're in a group, maybe a mixed gender group. The topic comes up of equality or gender. And suddenly men who had been perfectly talkative suddenly clam up. and they look at their shoes. They go wander off and look for a drink, right? They feel like they're afraid they're going to say the wrong thing and that we women are going to bite their heads off. And so what I want to do with That's What She Said is to eliminate that fear, to say, here's what the issues are. Let's put them out on the table. Let's make them discussable. And since the book has come out, I've seen a real change. And that is largely due to the Me Too movement. This moment in time, it's highly connected to all of the issues I talk about in That's What She Said. And now those issues are public. They're on the table. We can discuss them in mixed company. I have noticed I'm doing a lot of live events. And I get a lot of men in the audience, probably not quite 50%, but pretty close, which is amazing. I mean, I was recommended last week on LinkedIn by Mark Cuban. It's getting like a lot of men and prominent men are championing the book, reading the book, taking away lessons from it and championing it. And when I do readings, I see when I'm signing books, when the book first came out, the first few men who bought the book would say, oh, could you sign it for my daughter or my wife? And now they're like, this is for me. Sign it for me, which is great. This is what you want. You want men to be part of this conversation.
You know, I think it's so important what you just said there about men being a part of this conversation. I think one of the challenges, though, is that gender equality is often seen as inherently threatening, right? It means more for women, somehow less for men. That's kind of the association we have.
Right.
So how do you approach this? I mean, how do you go about engaging men on this topic?
So I think we have had some serious, serious issues with the approach. And I see a couple of flaws, and I do detail this in That's What She Said. One of them is, first of all, diversity training, traditional diversity training has failed. Traditional diversity training, as we know it, began, you know, maybe 30, 40 years ago. It was in response to legal challenges. Back in the 70s, a number of women at places like Newsweek and the New York Times and in some other institutions began suing to be able to have equal rights with men. The response was this sort of diversity training that came up that was legal compliance. And there's a Harvard professor by the name of Frank Dobbin who surveyed 30 years of diversity training at more than 700 companies. And he concluded that it actually made things worse for women as well as for Black men and women. And there were a variety of reasons for this, but one of the bottom line reasons was frankly that it alienated the men who were the primary people who were getting the training. And the men were rebelling. I mean, they were really rejecting it. They felt like they were being punished and beaten up. And in fact, they were. I talked to a veteran diversity trainer who said, look, when we started this, we were basically banging white men over the head with a 2x4 and trying to make them feel guilty. And so that absolutely backfired. So that's been one issue.
Yeah, and just on that, Joanne, I mean, how's that changed over time?
There's been, you know, a change now in the training. The growth area in training right now is unconscious bias training, men and women. Both have biases that are buried so deep inside of us, we don't even know they exist. And it is true that both men and women have them. Women have them against other women. Blacks have them against other Blacks. I mean, it's very, very deeply buried inside of us. And the idea with unconscious bias training is let's recognize these biases and then we can take action to counteract our own biases. And by the way, we all have them, so we're not singling anyone out. So that's fine in and of itself. And in fact, for That's What She Said, I actually went out to Silicon Valley. They actually are in the forefront of this training. I took the training at Facebook with Facebook employees. The problem with diversity training, it's not the training per se. It's that what I see in too many companies is that it's being delegated to the HR department. And it doesn't work for the HR department to own this. The way any organization is going to change has to come from the leadership from the top. And it's got to come from the CEO of a corporation as well as the CFO, the chief financial officer, because every piece of research will show you that having a more diverse workforce leads to greater financial success. And I cite, and that's what she said, a variety of research about more women in leadership leads to greater return on equity, more female CFOs, chief financial officers, get better results and make better acquisitions than male chief financial officers. you add women to homogeneous work groups and they make better decisions and more creative decisions. So at every level, there's all this research that tells you this. So it needs to be owned by that CEO, by the CFO, or by the head of whatever the organization is, including the government, by the way, whether it's the White House or whether it's an NGO, it's got to be owned by leadership. And if it's not, if they don't take responsibility, and if they don't believe it, it will not seep into the culture and we won't have culture change.
I completely agree with you, Joanne. You know, this idea that gender equality starts at the top of an organization. Have you got an example you can share with our listeners as to where you've seen this?
I'll give you an example of how it doesn't work. I spent a lot of time with Google. There's a unconscious bias executive there who I spent a lot of time with, who is phenomenal. And he's one of the great experts in the country on this, and he does fantastic work. But at the same time, you have the chief executive of Alphabet, Eric Schmidt, going out there and saying, my ideal worker is someone who works really hard all day, goes home and has dinner, and then gets right back online. Well, what message does that send, right? And whose message is going to be stronger? It's going to be the guy who runs the company. And that's the really, really important piece of the ownership. And I think that has been an area where we have a lot of work to do as a country.
Definitely. I mean, I completely agree with you that we have, you know, a long way to go. I think one of the reasons, though, for this is the tension points that you talk about in your book between men and women. I mean, could you maybe summarize for our listeners, you know, what some of those tension points are?
Yeah, so there's clearly differences in general, I should say, because every specific case is different, right? And different individuals are different. But in general, women and men have different communication styles, and therefore, there are a lot of missed signals. Also, the workplace was built by men for men. The modern workplace really evolved after World War II, and it came from a military hierarchical model. And so women spend all day, every day, making 1,000 tiny adjustments to fit into this workplace that was created for men. I mean, even things like the fact that I've always been, you know, I've spent my career working in offices, and I'm always freezing. Always freezing. I have a shawl. I have a space heater. I have gloves. I sometimes will be typing in gloves, freezing. And I once asked my doctor, am I literally thin-skinned? But it turns out, no. It turns out that office temperatures since the 60s have been set according to a 154-pound man in a business suit. And men have a faster metabolism. So that explains why not just me, but so many other women are freezing cold in an office. That's just one tiny example. But there are others. You know, there is generally, if women make up, or any underrepresented group makes up a third or less in a meeting, their voices aren't heard. And so you'll see things like, I think almost every woman, I ask this whenever I do talks, I ask women to raise their hand. I said, have you ever been in a meeting where you said something and it seems like no one heard it and it's crickets? And then 2 minutes later, some guy says exactly the same thing. And everybody says, wow, Dave, great idea you had, Dave. And it's attributed to him. And usually 100% of the arms in the audience go up from among the women. By the way, this has happened to me about a million times, and I used to think it was just me, but it's not. The research actually shows us that it's women. Same thing with interruptions. The research tells us that women are interrupted 3 times more frequently than men are. Northwestern did research on the Supreme Court of the United States and found that the female Supreme Court justices are interrupted 3 times more frequently than male Supreme Court justices. So it's something that is universal to women. And you know what's been very damaging is that so many women have had this experience, but they think it's just them and it's their problem to solve. And what the research tells us, what That's What She Said is all about, is telling all of us, men and women, hey, these are real issues. They are not just you, women. And by the way, the men need to be aware of them. And then next step is, okay, here are some solutions for these problems that can help close the gap.
As of today, only 24 female CEOs lead Fortune 500 companies. This number dropped from last year when about 32 women held the title, which was a record-breaking number. Despite the drop, overall, the percentage of women in senior leadership roles has generally increased. It's important to acknowledge that part of this is because more men have advocated for women at work. But real change requires all of us. To consistently increase the number of women leaders, we need both men and women to work together to reinvent workplace culture. So Joanna, you know, what's your advice for men? I mean, based on all your research and all the work that you've done in the space, you know, what do you think men can do differently?
Yes, so the man who I interviewed for That's What She Said actually came up with their own sort of tips and tricks that I distilled in the book. And, you know, among them were, you know, we just talked about interruptions. There are a couple of men who I spoke to who are in leadership positions who have created a no interruptions rule, where, you know, men or women must be allowed to finish their thought before anyone else interrupts them. And that really works. And by the way, I think you don't have to be the leader of the meeting for that to work. I feel like anyone can be empowered within a meeting if someone is interrupted to say, wait a second, you know, Chloe was making a really interesting point. Chloe, why don't you finish? And it's subtle, but it works. There's another strategy that some people told me about, and that actually the women of the Obama administration talked about this very openly, called amplification. Amplification is this idea, you know, because women's ideas very often are not heard during a meeting, one woman will say something and then a second woman will immediately jump in and reinforce her point and repeat it and give her credit for it. There's a similar strategy, and this can be men or women doing this. I think allies are incredibly important, but your ally can be a man as easily as it can be a woman, right? And it can be a peer. It doesn't have to be a supervisor. But one of the things that women in a consulting firm came up with was, you know, the research tells us that women are actually better than men in many cases in advocating on behalf of someone else, but they are less successful than men at advocating on their own behalf. And there are sociological reasons for this. You know, there are stereotypes. Women are seen as helpers. Women who speak proudly of their own achievements are penalized for it because they're acting out of stereotypical behavior, whereas men who do the same thing are not penalized. They're rewarded for it. But in any case, the women in this consulting firm came up with a strategy they call brag buddies. And that is, I tell you my accomplishments, you tell me your accomplishments, and then we both go and brag to the boss about the other. And that's been very successful too.
I think that's great advice. But what about men in leadership? I mean, given that we have so many male leaders, what are some of the things that you think they can start doing now?
It's so important when you have an opening or when you're considering promotions, first of all, to have a diverse slate. If you have an opening, make sure you have a diverse slate of candidates. What I learned in researching That's What She Said is that is not enough. However, you also have to have a diverse slate of interviewers, because if you don't have a diverse slate of interviewers and you've got a bunch of white guys who are doing the interviewing, then you still have that situation where, you know, you don't get the optimal result, because all of us are drawn to people who remind us of ourselves. So white men who are interviewing a diverse slate of candidates or evaluating diverse employees for promotions are really more likely to agree with one another and to gravitate and give those promotions and positions to other white men. So you really got to have diversity all around. And that actually changed the way that I manage myself. I made changes in my own management style because of that.
So Joanna, my only other question then is for women. Based on everything you've read and everything you've researched, what do you think women can do to maybe approach men differently about this topic?
Right. So there are a few things that women can do. One of them is to help take away the fear factor. Honestly, I mean, men are literally are afraid that we will yell at them and resist the temptation. I see in my appearances when I'm speaking to groups, inevitably there will be a woman, very often a very young woman. I find that millennial women in general, they're angry. They're angry at men, but they're also angry at this older generation of people more like my age, because we didn't fix this. Like, how can this still be going on? And I say, turn that anger into action, because it's important for us to fix the problem. We really need to reach out. One thing that women can do as well is to acknowledge our own biases. there's a test you can take to test your unconscious bias. It's at projectimplicit.org. I took the test for working women and I failed. I came out as moderately biased against working women, which is sort of hilarious. But at the same time, it's something that's useful for us to acknowledge that we have biases too. And I would say the one other thing for women is, you know, marshal the facts, right? Understand how a diverse workforce actually makes things better for the men, not just for the women.
And finally, Joanna, my last question is just with regards to organizations. So do you have any advice for workplaces based on what you've seen in terms of programs that work or how men and women at work can maybe approach this whole gender equality piece differently?
Yeah, you know, I actually think that one thing that I've suggested to groups is there's a lot of these, a lot of companies now have women's employee resource groups, which can be very helpful for women talking to one another. But I always suggest that at least some of the time, invite men and let them in because it's valuable for them to be part of that conversation, for them to hear what your concerns are. It will lead to better results. And I actually spoke with a consulting firm that did this. They were having a women-only meeting at an employee retreat. And they decided for part of the meeting that the senior women in this consulting firm would each invite a senior man. And what they found is the men were so excited to be invited. They really wanted to be invited. And it led to a really good dialogue. And it also led to the senior men being exposed to more junior women. And when you have that relationship building, it's really important for a career advancement. Those women are now more likely to be promoted. They're more likely to have the sort of relationship that actually makes them feel more comfortable at the firm. So it helps with retention. It helps the men, right? You know, when you have formal mentorship programs, the several companies that have done this have found that it helps the women who are being mentored, but it helps the mentors just as much. It actually helps with retention of senior people as well.
I highly recommend that you grab a copy of Joanne's book. It's got so many useful resources and advice that all of us can use. As you know, I do my best to talk about gender equality on this podcast and on my social media channels, as well as the videos that I post on LinkedIn. So I really hope that it's helping some of you who may be looking for advice or who are going through some of the challenges that we tackle on this podcast. So thank you again for continuing to support us. That's it for this week, and I'll catch you guys again next week.
She Innovates is produced by Human Group Media, a company that inspires people to do good through the power of audio storytelling. This podcast is made possible by SAP NextGen, an innovation platform that enables everyone, from individuals, companies, partners, and universities, to connect and innovate with purpose. In doing so, SAP NextGen supports the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals.